Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right, every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in 4 dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis and ulcerative colitis. Each week I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right, every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in 4 dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome to episode 126 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm delighted this afternoon to be joined by Laura. Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for inviting me to share our Hirschsprungs story.
Yeah. And what a story it is. I know we'll get into it. We'll get into it in a little bit. But this is not your typical diagnosed with Hirschsprungs and then everything sort of jogs along absolutely fine. There seems to be an awful lot to this story. So with that being said, would you like to take us sort of, well, back to the very beginning?
Yeah, absolutely. So July 2023, I gave birth to my daughter Harriet, and had a really easy pregnancy, to be fair. Like, it was my first pregnancy, everything was really chill. Had no issues, nothing came up on any scans that we had. There was no sign of any kind of trouble, so to speak. I was very, very overdue. So she did not arrive until I think 11 days after her due date. And I was in hospital 5 days prior to her being born, because she was that stubborn that she just did not want to come out. they really tried everything and she just was having none of it. So eventually ended up in an emergency C-section. So obviously the lead up to the birth was all quite traumatic. There was a lot going on, lots of medical interventions. And obviously when you've not had a baby before, it's just very like, whoa, you know. But she arrived and she was gorgeous. She was tiny, but gorgeous. I think she was 6 pounds, 8 ounces, which is quite small for a very, very overdue baby. But all seemed fine, sort of those first few hours after birth. And then throughout the day, we were having difficulty feeding her. So anytime she had any like milk or colostrum, it just kept coming back up. And it was kind of like this like bright green color. And a few of the pediatric doctors looked at her and just said, oh, it's just mucus from the C-section. You know, she'll be fine. It's just going to clear out. And I don't really remember a lot from that day because I was so out of it. I was so tired. And I just remember during the night, the midwives taking her away for a little bit and trying to get her to feed on some formula. And it just wasn't happening. Anything that went in came straight back out. And she also hadn't passed any meconium at this point either. So the next day, a new midwife came onto the ward, hadn't seen her before. Her name was Jane. And she kind of looked at what happened overnight and she said, something's not right here. Like, I'm not happy. And I overheard her actually on the phone speaking to, I guess, the pediatric registrar or something, saying, you will send a different doctor to come and look at this baby because I'm not happy with the one that has looked at her before. So yeah, it was all a bit of a whirlwind. A different doctor came down and then immediately took her over to the special care baby unit. So this was at York Hospital, by the way, where she was born. So they don't have a NICU at York. They just have the special care baby unit. And they took her and we had no idea what was going on. And we waited for what felt like hours. And eventually I got wheeled over to a special care baby unit. And they said, there is something wrong with baby's intestines. We're not too sure what it is, but we can't treat it here. So Harriet was loaded up into this massive kind of like, I don't even know what you would call it. It was like a bed, but it was like a big kind of like machine almost. And they popped her in there for transport and took her over to Leeds General Infirmary. Now, at this point, I'm, 36 hours on from an emergency C-section, not very mobile, not feeling great. But I said, there's no way I'm staying in York. I'm going to Leeds, you know, where my baby is. And the midwives were a bit like, we don't think you're well enough to go. And I was like, I don't care. I'm going. And I think they tried to do every test they could to kind of keep me there. But luckily, everything came back where they kind of said, well, you know, we can discharge you, but, you know, you need to take it easy. So this was sort of like the evening by that point. And my husband drove us over to Leeds. So from York, that's about a 40-minute drive. It felt like the longest drive in the world after having major surgery. We got over to LGI, found Harriet. She was on the surgical newborn ward. And we got there and they said, look, we're not sure what it is, but we think it could be this thing called Hirschsprung's disease. Me and my husband are like, what is that? You know, we've never heard of it. You know, it's not in our family. It's not something that we're familiar with. And I think that night, I think just all the emotions and the adrenaline, and because it was nighttime, we just didn't have a chance to speak to anybody about it or to understand, you know, what Hirschsprung's was. And I just remember they put us in this little side room just off the ward. And my husband and I, we just cried because we just, you know, we were so scared. We thought, you know, were we going to lose her? We just had no idea what was about to begin. Because that really was just the very start of it. And yeah, she was kept in LGI for I think about 2.5 weeks. She was put on bowel washouts to clear the stool out from her bowel. And basically it was just a case of getting her feeding and comfortable so that she could come home with us and we could continue to do the bowel washouts from home. So yeah, so that was just the start.
Yeah, I mean that sounds... Again, I can't imagine how people feel when you go in. And yes, I know you said Harriet was slightly overdue, but you go in and you sort of expect a normal, quote unquote, you know, having had a normal pregnancy, and you expect a more sad. Then for just the entire world to be turned upside down, I mean, yeah. I can't imagine how that must feel.
Absolutely. And, you know, it really did feel like the whole thing just had turned completely upside down. And I think as well with kind of very new diagnoses, I think surgeons are quite reluctant to kind of have those realistic conversations with you at that point. So I remember kind of you know, having it in my head that, oh, well, she would just have a bit of surgery and, you know, everything would be hunky-dory. And obviously, you know, that wasn't the case. And I know now from, you know, experience and seeing other people's stories that isn't very often the case, that, you know, it's surgery and then, you know, everything's normal. And I don't like to use that word, but that's kind of, you know, where we're at. So we, you know, we kind of went home and adjusted to life with bowel washouts. They were okay. She coped with them well. We coped with them okay. It's, you know, weird thing to do. But you just kind of get used to it and that just becomes what's normal for you. But it did restrict us quite a lot, you know, that we had to kind of plan, you know, if we went anywhere, it would have to be around washouts. We couldn't, you know, let other people look after her for any sort of extended period because they weren't trained in washouts. So, and it felt like quite an isolating experience because how do you explain to your friends that have babies that this is something that you're doing? And I think both of us at the time probably didn't talk about it a lot because we didn't know how. And I think people as well don't really know how to talk about it without feeling awkward. I think it was quite isolating in those early days, just overwhelming with all of a sudden having to A, care for a child just generally, and then B, all these additional things that you had to do. You know, that made it even more complex. But we continued with the washouts until Harriet was about 3 months old. And one day the washouts just stopped working. We were getting no results from the bowel washouts. No stool was coming out, no gas. So we rang the stoma nurses at LGI. They said to bring her in. They'll have a little look. And basically Harriet was just admitted until they could get a result from the washouts. But I think we were in for about a week, trying the washouts with the stoma nurses, with the surgeons there, trying to figure out what might be going on. And you know, they couldn't figure it out. They thought it could be enterocolitis, but that there just wasn't enough kind of evidence to suggest what was going on. But Harriet was getting more poorly, obviously not being able to clear everything out. And so they scheduled her for an ileostomy. And then the morning that she was due to have the ileostomy, she tested positive for COVID. So they had to cancel the surgery. Obviously, with her being such a small baby, the anaesthetist was not prepared to continue, which is obviously the right decision. But at the time, we were just, we'd gotten ourselves so geared up, you know, for preparing for the surgery. And then, you know, it wasn't going to happen. And I also caught COVID at the same time. So we got isolated in this tiny little side room on the ward, just me and Harriet, both had COVID, both feeling absolutely awful. It was a horrible experience and definitely don't recommend it. But by some miracle, the washouts started working again. So I think the plan was to kind of delay the surgery until she was well. But it got to a point where we were back to regular washouts. The outcomes were as expected, and they were quite happy for her to be discharged back home. And we carried on as normal for another few months. And then at 6 months, she got very unwell again. And we took her in, and the surgeon just said, we need to put her into emergency surgery because, you know, she's very sick, and it was enterocolitis, and it, you know, it just makes the kids so unwell. And their best course of action was that, you know, to kind of get the ileostomy done now to prevent this kind of happening again. So she had the surgery and she did really well. She recovered really quickly. I think we were admitted and discharged within about 7 days. And she was an absolute trooper. And we kind of noticed as her parents that once she'd had that surgery, she actually seemed a lot brighter. She just looked healthier. So I think, you know, I still stand by it. It was the best thing that I think could have happened for Harriet at that time. And I think it was the right thing to do just in terms of getting her to a point where she could be well, because these recurrent enterocolitis episodes were delaying her having a pull-through surgery. Which is kind of what the goal that we were always working towards was.
Yeah, most definitely. And when the enterocolitis happened a second time, did you recognize the signs earlier at that time?
Honestly, no. And I think enterocolitis is so tricky because even the medical professionals themselves can't accurately diagnose it. They just kind of go on best guess. So they'll look at the x-rays, they'll look at, you know, blood cultures, and they'll say it's likely enterocolitis. But, you know, it every child presents differently as well. So Harriet doesn't tend to get a temperature. She's never been a child that gets temperatures, but, you know, we spot signs like the vomiting. That's always one that she gets. And now that she has the ileostomy, you know, the kind of watery output, those are kind of the key indicators that something's not quite right. But then, you know, those are also the symptoms of so many other conditions and illnesses for children. So it's really difficult to know what you're dealing with. So we always just kind of act cautiously. And as soon as there's a sign of something not being quite right, you know, we always contact the hospital, the stoma nurses, get some advice, and generally they say to bring her in.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's such a difficult condition, like you say. It's such a difficult condition to diagnose because it could be so many other things.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So many other things. And I guess one point that we'll touch on that I can't remember if we mentioned yet already, but that Harriet is total colonic, Hirschsprung's. That wasn't necessarily what they thought it was going to be originally. Is that right?
Yeah. So we didn't find out that she was total colonic until she was about 9 months old, where she finally got to a point the ileostomy was working super well for her. She was really healthy, really happy. She put on quite a bit of weight as well. And that was something that they'd always been a bit kind of cagey about. She was a small baby anyway, and she was slow to kind of grow any weight. But she got to the point where she was really healthy, and they said, okay, let's do the pull through. Let's see how it's going. And they took her down for surgery. And during the surgery, they biopsied her colon. And the way they do it at LGI is really weird because they have to take the biopsy, put it in a taxi, and send it over to St. James's Hospital to their lab while she's like open for surgery and wait for them to call back with the results. So this went on for quite some time because they were back and forth between two hospitals. And, you know, they said it's going to be a long surgery, just, you know, take some time off the ward, go out for the day. So my husband and I, you know, Leeds is a great city. We love it there. And we just sort of went on a bit of like a coffee shop tour. There's loads of good coffee shops. Obviously, we were so anxious, so we couldn't really enjoy ourselves, but we were just kind of like hopping around these coffee shops for a couple of hours. And then they called us, I think about lunchtime, and they said, we have stopped the surgery. Can you come back to the hospital and we'll explain what's going on? They said, Harriet's absolutely fine, but we can't continue. So of course, obviously our minds are we're just thinking, what on earth has happened? Because I don't think it ever occurred to us at that point that they wouldn't be able to do the pull through surgery. So we got back, surgeon sat us down and basically said, look, we have biopsied pretty much all her colon except for 5 centimeters, and none of it is viable. It's aganglionic. And he said, I think we are looking at, you know, total colonic Hirschsprung's disease. And he said that wasn't what we expected because she'd had successful washouts for the most part, you know, for 6 months before the ileostomy. So it was kind of a shock to everybody. But I guess, you know, you don't know what you're dealing with until you get in there and you get the biopsies and see what happens. So that really kind of floored us because we thought, well, what happens now? Where does that leave her? And basically the plan was then to just keep the ileostomy as it is, work on getting the output to be a lot thicker so that when they revisited pull through again a little bit later on, when she has the pull through and the stoma reversed, the stool that comes out is going to be a little bit thicker and isn't going to cause as many issues, sort of like with the, you know, the nappy rash and things like that. So that was kind of where we left things when she was 9 months old. And then I would say the year after that, I could only describe as just absolute hell. We had so many issues initially with the ileostomy and leaks and not being able to find the right products, and just really struggling. You know, there'd be days where we would be doing 5 or 6 bag changes a day. And it would, you know, you'd put one on and then half an hour later it would go again. And you just think, oh my gosh, what are we doing wrong? Why is it not working? And obviously when you're sort of, you know, 9 month old babies are, you know, a lot less docile than newborn babies. So that added an extra layer of kind of stress to it. And then pretty much like clockwork for the next year, every 3 months, Harriet got enterocolitis, even with the stoma. And well, they say enterocolitis. We don't know. It could have been tummy bugs. It's so hard to kind of tell exactly what they're dealing with. But she's always been treated as somebody that has kind of chronic enterocolitis. And yeah, pretty much you could set your watch to it. You know, it would be 3 months and we'd be back in again. The vomiting, the diarrhea, etc. There was one time, October 2024, where she did have a tummy bug. And we know that because the rest of us caught it.
Okay.
So she was sick in hospital. I was with her and got sick myself. I just have a memory of lying on, you know, like the little like pull-out chair beds that they have in hospital, lying on there feeling absolutely awful and not being able to get up while a bunch of nurses were trying to sort Harriet's cannula out because she'd pulled it out. And you just think, oh my gosh, like what even is my life that this is happening? And the cherry on top of the cake was that we were actually trying to move house at this point. So we were relocating to Teesside. So we were packing all our stuff up in York, relocating to Teesside. My husband got sick, so had to pack up the entire house by himself because nobody could help him because obviously they would catch, you know, the bug. And it is one of those things, I look back on it now and obviously I can laugh, but you just think, how did we get through that? Because, you know, house moves are stressful at the best of times, but then, you know, you've got a toddler in hospital, everybody in the family's sick, nobody can help you pack your house up, and obviously you've got to move by a certain date. There's no extending it. So, yeah, it was just a total nightmare. That was probably, like, the worst hospital admission that we've had. And also, Harriet was really, really unwell at that point, to the point where she actually ended up going on TPN. Because she'd lost so much weight from being poorly that they had to get her onto total parenteral nutrition through a PIC line. So that was another surgery that she had to have, going under the general anaesthetic to have the PIC line catheter inserted. And again, that was another kind of thing that we didn't really know about. So we didn't know anything about PIC lines or about TPN and how that worked. So it's like all these interventions that she's kind of had throughout her journey. I mean, it's great in some ways. I feel like we've learned a lot of lessons, but it's also a lot for, you know, a child. She wasn't even 2 at this point, you know, to go through. And that can be quite hard, sort of remembering all that and thinking about, you know, the pain that she must have been in, but not being able to communicate it. And for us as parents, being able to do very little about it. Yeah, that's like really, really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. Sorry, no, I can imagine that's, excuse me. I can imagine that's incredibly tough because you're almost, you got both hands tied together. You can't do a great deal. Obviously you try and do like everything you can, but it must be, yeah, it must be incredibly hard. But on the subject you just said about the whole moving house and having Harriet in hospital, and sort of, I hear this from a lot of parents who say, well, I have no idea how we got through it. Like, I just, you know, when you think of obstacles in life and you think, well, how on earth did we get through it? Sometimes it's one of those things where actually you're a lot stronger than maybe you thought you were at the beginning.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely. And it's one of those where maybe like today, when you look back on it and think, well, actually, how did we do that? But maybe at the time it was just, well, we'll just do X, Y, Z.
Exactly. I think I think as a parent anyway, you get this kind of newfound ability to just push through things. And then obviously when you kind of add medical complexities on top of that, you know, you do kind of build this resilience and this ability to weather life storms. And, you know, in some ways I'm almost grateful to have had this experience because, you know, it has made me a much stronger person. And, you know, I'm seeing it now in kind of the things that I'm doing in my life. It's given me a lot of strength. So, for example, I work for a university and I do a bit of work with their healthcare team. And I do presentations about Harriet and talk about Hirschsprung's disease. And, you know, a few years ago, I would never have been able to stand up in front of, you know, 30 or 50 people and deliver a presentation. And now I can do that. So it's all these little ways in which that this journey has kind of, you know, strengthened, you know, myself and the husband. And I mean, Harriet is the strongest of us all, because I have to say, nothing bothers that girl at all. She just gets on with life. She has the best life ever and has so much fun. And I really think that, you know, if you didn't know that she had Hirschsprung's, if you didn't know that she had the ileostomy, you wouldn't know a thing, because she's just so full of energy, full of life. And we are so fortunate that that is our experience of the day to day, because I know that for so many families that live with Hirschsprung's, that is not always the case. So while we've had a rough ride of things in terms of hospital admissions and sickness bugs and that sort of thing, you know, we are very fortunate that our day-to-day life is at the moment much more settled.
Yeah, no, that's really, really good to hear. And you, like you said, you know, you end up being a lot stronger than you think you are. And it's great to hear as well that you've done presentations and talked to various healthcare teams, which I think is absolutely fantastic, because above everything else, it gets more awareness out there. And you know, again, like, you talk to a lot of healthcare professionals, and they can't know everything about everything, of course. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot that still have no idea what, I mean, if you said the term Hirschsprung's disease, they probably wouldn't even know what part of the body it would be.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
we see that all the time. And for example, one of our local hospitals is James Cook Hospital in Middlesbrough, which is quite a big hospital. And, you know, it's quite a specialist hospital, but the pediatric staff there, the couple of times where Harriet has had to go, usually for things that aren't Hirschsprung's related, they have no idea what Hirschsprung's is. They don't even know anything about stoma care. It's, you know, it is very much kind of, certainly in my experience, I feel like it is really the children's hospitals, the specialist children's hospitals, that are the only places that are equipped to kind of deal with Hirschsprung's and everything that comes under that umbrella. You know, and for some people, we're quite lucky. Leeds, for us, we're still under Leeds, even though we live in Middlesbrough. But for us, it's about, I don't know, an hour and a quarter in the car. Some people, you know, their nearest children's hospital is 100 miles away, or, you know, 150 miles away. And to be able to get the care that they need, you know, it's so much more complicated once you add distance as a factor. So it blows my mind a little bit that, you know, this is, obviously, you know, Hirschsprung's is quite rare, but it's not as rare as other kind of medical conditions that seem to be, you know, people have a lot of knowledge of and understanding of. So I think being able to raise awareness about it and talk about it, I think is really important.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, just from my own experience in terms of distance. I mean, I live in Suffolk, and my children's hospital that I went to was Great Ormond Street in London. Which is you know, fairly far away, even on the train, and going there once there every 3 months, 6 months throughout my childhood, it is you know, a fair old distance. So there are people who travel a lot further, because you need that specialist care, and you need those specialists. You know, the people that know you and the people who know how to treat you, and I think that's really important. And just on the subject of awareness, as well, I know you're also a big part of a new charity, or going to be charity soon, I think.
Not quite a charity yet, but yeah.
Going to be a charity soon, of Hirschsprung's Disease UK. In terms of your kind of involvement and role within there, what do you do?
So I'm one of the trustees, and we work with our founder, Georgina. And at the minute, we're still trying to kind of figure out what we can do, and I guess what we would like to do. So for me, the kind of long-term goal, I think, has always been about creating a network of Hirschsprung's families. Where I live in the Northeast, there doesn't seem to be a great deal going on. So I know in some areas there's a bit more of a community, but in others there really isn't. I do think a lot of it is very dependent on where you live. For example, if you live sort of like Liverpool way and you're linked in with Alder Hey Hospital, there's probably a bit more going on for you than if you're based, you know, up in Newcastle or Middlesbrough, like I am. So the long term for me would be to be able to kind of facilitate building those networks, working with the hospitals, the universities, tying everything in and being able to create these kind of branches across the UK to support families. I think it's a very lonely experience going through the Hirschsprung's journey. And I think, you know, at the time when we were kind of going through it initially, knowing that there was a place that I could go to, even if it was just a forum or, you know, an online website where other people had had this experience, and you could kind of see people through different stages of it. So people that have babies with Hirschsprung's, people that have teenagers, and then adults with Hirschsprung's, you know, kind of seeing how that journey can look for different people. I think that probably would have helped us a lot in terms of coming to terms with that diagnosis and understanding what that means. So that is kind of, for me, a big thing. And I think as well, having a place for parents to talk about the challenges of parenting a child with Hirschsprung's. You know, I think we're sometimes, you know, generally as parents to say that, you know, afraid to say that we're struggling and that things are really hard. And when, you know, for example, I'm in like a WhatsApp group with a bunch of mums, and, you know, all their kids, thankfully, are very healthy and happy. And then, you know, when I'm having a sort of like difficulty with Harriet's Hirschsprung's or something's happening, it's quite hard for me to kind of talk about it because I know they can't understand and I don't expect them to understand. But there isn't really anywhere else I can kind of get that out there. So, you know, I think being able to connect with other people, to know that you're not alone, I think that is a really, really important thing. And I would really like to be a big part of kind of building that up, you know, in future. And also for, you know, children today that have Hirschsprung's, for them to be able to build networks and to meet people. Obviously, we're very lucky in this day and age that we have the internet, social media. It's easier than ever to connect with people all over the world. But I think having Hirschsprung's Disease UK is kind of like a central hub for that. You know, people can find exactly what it is they're looking for just in one place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And especially with it being UK centric as well, because there are certain things in the UK system that are, having interview people in South Africa, Canada, China, America, etc. The healthcare system is completely different wherever you go. So having something that is UK centric that you can talk to people within, I think will be absolutely fantastic. Really looking forward to seeing how that progresses. And as we sit here just now, I just received my little Hirschsprung's card. My little key ring as well. So those came very promptly in the post. So yeah, no, it sounds fantastic. And also on the subject of being able to talk to other people who have Hirschsprung's, whether they have Hirschsprung's or whether they are parents of a child with Hirschsprung's. I think that leads us on to sort of parental mental health, which I think is still an underexplored topic. And I think having discussed this with a few people, not many, but a few people, I think it's something that is, I know that you wanted to talk about, and I think it's something that is incredibly important when it comes to not just Hirschsprung's, but having a child with a chronic condition. You know, like you said, you have a child diagnosed with a condition that nobody's ever heard of, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're going, well, what on earth could my child do? Are they going to be able to walk and talk and go to school and, you know, play sports or anything like that? I guess, would you like to talk a little bit about your experience in that field?
Absolutely. I mean, I've always kind of said with our experience, I'm an open book insofar as how I feel and what my experience of things is. But obviously, I can't speak for Harriet, and I kind of don't want to kind of put things out there that, you know, she can't really defend herself against, especially if she's a child. I think one of the things that's very difficult to talk about when it comes to the mental health of a parent of a child that has a chronic condition is that you almost feel like you can't really talk about it because it's your child that has the problem, you know? It's your child that is having the surgeries. It's your child that is having the hundreds of cannula attempts and all those sorts of things. So you kind of feel a bit like, well, I can't make it about me, and I can't fall apart now because, you know, it's not me that has the condition. But I think it takes such a toll because it's not just, you know, the diagnosis is everything that comes with it. It's the mental load of it. It's knowing the prescriptions, ordering the prescriptions, keeping track of hospital appointments, knowing, you know, when your child is unwell and what you need to do, always having a backpack to go to hospital. It's all these things that you just kind of, you just do them because you have to, you have no choice. but it's still there. You're always thinking about what's the next thing going to be. And that is huge for anybody to take on. And it's not always going to be easy. You know, and I think when you're in situations where your child's in hospital, you're not sleeping, you're not eating very well, you know, you're not really being able to look after yourself, I think you absolutely are susceptible to experiencing poor mental health. And I think that it's not always picked up on or recognized, or in those situations, you know, it can't really be focused on because obviously the priority is looking after the child that is unwell. But I've definitely, a couple of times when we've been admitted, experienced some really difficult mental health issues. I was very lucky in that LGI have something called a gastropsychologist that we work with, who is so lovely. And she kind of supports us as a family, and talks about what we're experiencing, how we feel about it, and what we can do to kind of, you know, make the situation better. But I'm very acutely aware that that's not everyone's experience. And I think a lot of parents probably suffer in silence, and probably don't really know how to get out of things. So I think, you know, with Hirschsprung's Disease UK, I think it would be great if we can kind of filter in a bit of support for parental mental health and look at how we can improve our mental health even when we are faced with incredibly difficult situations. But ultimately, you can't look after anybody until you can look after yourself. And I think certainly in the last year, we've been very lucky that things have kind of been a bit easier for us. Harriet's not been in hospital as much. We have, you know, a relatively okay day-to-day life. That's given me a bit of breathing room to kind of think about, okay, well, how can I improve my mental health? How can I deal with situations better? But obviously, that isn't always the case. People don't get that kind of that break. So I think having a bit more, certainly in the hospitals as well, just a bit more kind of integrated support for parents, I think would really be invaluable. Because it is really hard. And like I said, you know, not every day is going to be an easy day. And it's not always possible to think, well, you know, I'm lucky because things could be worse. You know, you get very bogged down in the situation that you're in. So, yeah, and that can be you know, extraordinarily tough, and it feels like nobody really gets it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's good to know that there is a gastropsychologist. I'd never heard of that term before.
I'd never heard of it either. But yeah, that actually is. Yeah.
That's really, really good to hear. Because the links as well, having read a lot of papers as I have, the links between gastro health and mental health are huge. Or gastro health and brain health are massive. So I guess we are possibly more susceptible having a stomach condition to other issues as well. But that's really, really good to hear. And like you say, you know, everybody is different when it comes to having a chronic condition or being a parent of a child with a chronic condition. So I guess it's quite difficult to have a sort of one size fits all approach.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's always going to be a challenge. I mean, like, how many different types of Hirschsprungs do we have? You know, ultra short segment, long segment, total clonic, you know, and within that, every child, you know, experiences it differently. And then every parent experiences differently. You know, some families have absolutely brilliant support, other families don't. And I think being able to kind of deal with that inequality and make it a bit more kind of, you know, even across the board would go a long way in supporting families, you know, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And just on that point of how many do we have, I think it's six. However, I've just seen, I've been doing a little bit of research and talking to various parents with TCHD, total clonic, and then there's a little plus signal at the plus sign at the end of it. And that plus can mean loads of different things. So now my six Hirschsprungs that I put up a few weeks ago, I now think there's loads more. So I need to do some research before I start posting that again. But yeah, you're right. There's so many other conditions and potential sort of side effects that come with Hirschsprungs. And just as we wrap up, I know you've talked about how well Harriet's getting on at the moment. That's so, so good to hear that you haven't, get in touch with, had any admissions for a while. But what do you see for her in the future?
So where we're at with our journey at the moment is that because she's kind of doing so well with her ileostomy and hasn't had any kind of significant illnesses for a while, is just to kind of keep things as is. It may be the case that they, you know, offer pull-through surgery using her, you know, the tiny bit of, you know, colon that she's got left and the small intestine to do a pull-through. Me personally and my husband personally, our view is that because she has a reasonably good quality of life at the moment, we're not really prepared to kind of put her through that surgery. Just because I think there are just probably just too many risks in terms of what the outcomes are for her. And that's, at the moment, that is our choice. And we've been very lucky that, you know, the surgeons and stoma nurses have worked with us and kind of not really pushed us one way or the other. And we felt like we've been listened to in terms of making the argument for keeping things as they are. Whether when Harriet is a little bit older and has a bit more understanding of things, she, you know, wants to have a bit more input on that decision, then, you know, it's her body. That's her choice to make. I think as parents, we're always going to kind of hope that she doesn't kind of put herself through that. But being able to understand, it's not really going to be our decision forever. And I mean, that's another thing that, you know, we kind of carry the load of as parents of children with this condition, is that you're making these decisions for them. And, you know, one day we're going to have to explain to her why she has a stoma and, you know, why we didn't put her through a surgery and, you know, all these kind of tricky conversations that one day we will have to pick up. You know, that's a huge kind of load to carry as a parent. And, you know, we just kind of, with Harriet, even though she's only just coming up to three, you know, try to explain to her, you know, she's got Hirschsprungs, she has a stoma, you know, but she's so happy and healthy, and that's what makes her happy and healthy. And, you know, she's very interested in her stoma as well. She always likes to see what we're doing when we do bag changes. She wants to get involved. So I think for us, it's just about kind of building her own self-confidence as she grows up and goes through life. But yeah, like I said, she's just absolutely full of energy. And I think she's probably going to be quite sporty. So fingers crossed, you know, she kind of finds a way to balance that with, you know, the ileostomy, or if she ever does go through surgery, to be able to just keep on being herself. You know, this condition doesn't define her. It's just a part of who she is.
Absolutely. No, well said. Well said. But no, thank you so much for coming on, and all the work that you do with Hirschsprungs UK. Wish you all the success with that as well. And obviously wishing all the best for Harriet, for you, and the rest of the family. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.